okay, we will get ballots and hand them out during the course of the meeting for the voting. Okay, any other questions before we get started? Okay, we're going to start now with the presentations, and it's the Rockland overview. I would ask the committee hold questions until the overview is over. And the only reason I want to do that is I'm afraid that if we start into questions, we could get off on tangents, which may be important, but we will not accomplish what we want to in the overview. So hold your questions, especially when we get into the subcommittees. They will be appropriate to bring up there, and we will work on it. With that, Mr. Ross, if you would go ahead.
I'm Bill Lock, I'm a research analyst for the Revenue Committee. I'm going to be working with the information that's in the packet that is this public. So if you open that up. And pull out the information on the left-hand side of the packet first. And look at it, and it says, "Terms in taxation." We mailed out to you voluminous packet of information. Many of you have actually read a lot more than what we mailed out. But one of the things that we felt you needed to have for a good discussion was this list of terms in taxation. We'll use terms like base and rate, and we'll start using terms as the discussion deepens, like incidence, progressivity, regressivity, elasticity, and we may even use terms like capacity and effort. Those terms are all defined in this handout for you, so it's sort of a study guide. If you hear us speaking in language that seems unclear to you, you might want to take a look at this or ask us individually. When we get to talking about elasticity in particular later, we're going to be talking about how our tax system responds to economic growth and growth in personal income, and that will be an important part of your discussion. So we thought these were a set of terms that maybe you were familiar with, but for a couple of them, they might be new terms. So that's in your packet. That's why it's in your packet. On the right-hand side of your packet, there's a memo. It looks like this. And there's also a sheet that looks like this. It's in three-ring binder format, so you can put it in the binder if you're going to keep one. I'm going to start with the memo. And I felt that as we started the process, it would be important to review the principles that were written into LR 155. So you see them on the front page. I'm not going to walk you through them because we discussed them on the floor. But I am going to point out to you that on the second page, I included something that I wanted to do with you. You'll see that it's the LR 155 principles, just a simple term, and it says comments or questions, requests for information. What I'd like you to do with that, if you can, to help the staff that I'm working with and the staff that we will be working with, is to, if you take time today sometime, if you have some thoughts on those principles and especially your research needs, please write them down there. And then we'll try to come back to you later and work with you on what you write down. I'm going to suggest that you think about that as we go through the presentation today and maybe return to it at some point. Next, I'm going to move to the single sheet handout. To begin the discussion of tax policy in Nebraska, one of the things that we have to bear in mind is that our state constitution outlines principles of taxation for us. And there are several. On this sheet, I've listed what I believe to be the most important ones. The document, the memo, contains the actual text of several of them, because I think it's important enough to remind yourself from time to time about the text of your constitutional provisions. The ones that I've included in the document in full text are the Nebraska Uniformity Clause found in your state constitution. As you can see, I also included the source notes. It's been amended many times, but it remains intact as a uniformity clause as compared to those found in some other states. On page four, I've included the local or special laws section of the Constitution. I've included the income tax section of the Constitution. This was passed in 1965 and adopted in 66. And what it does is give you some instructions about structuring your income tax law. The next one on page four is the levy of property tax for state purposes and the prohibition. This actually has, this section of the Constitution came into being in 1954 and was amended again in 1966. It's pretty important to understanding the history of tax law in Nebraska. The one on the top of page five is the county taxes limitation, which, according to the source notes, originally appeared in 1875, but we've always dated its actual implementation to the Constitutional Convention of 1919 and 1920, wherein county governments in Nebraska were limited to a maximum levy of 50 cents. It's a pretty important restriction found in the Constitution. There are counties in Nebraska that have historically and currently voted to exceed this constitutional restriction. Finally, on the bottom of page five, there is the restriction on state debt. And some exceptions to that restriction. I term this one the sort of pay-as-you-go language in your Constitution that says that you're a government that will not be borrowing for operations, and you're severely limited in how much money you can borrow. There are some authorizations to borrow for certain purposes here, one of which is highways, one of which is educational facilities. And finally, on the bottom of page six, is the constitutional section which established the Tax Equalization and Review Commission. A fairly important recent development given the historical role of what we call the State Board of Equalization. This body was, the Tax Equalization and Review Commission was created more recently and acts as a regulatory body in a sense of the property tax field. We'll probably be discussing it a great deal as we get into the structure of the property. At the top of page seven, I just made some brief comments here because we mailed out the National Conference of State Legislatures tax policy principles. I hope you had a chance to look at them. They're a little bit more detailed than the ones that we put in LR 155, and they have a slightly different emphasis. The only point I would make on page seven that I think is really important for you to think about as we begin the activities is they describe it as a state and local revenue system. And they have a holistic view that it is not simply a state tax system that uses certain taxes, but it's a system of state and local government financing. And so there are certain taxes that are used in our context only by local government, i.e. the property tax. But the state shares use of the sales tax with local government. So we want you to keep it thinking as you move through this process in a system context. Anything you do in the sales tax base, anything you do in terms of the flow of state revenues, because you have relationships with local governments, will be altered, as will anything you do in the property tax base, because you have fiscal relationships with local governments that depend on measuring their value and their capacity to levy property taxes. And we'll talk about that more later. There's also an emphasis in those principles on economic neutrality, which is an important principle. And finally, at the bottom of page seven, I made note of the fact that they took a more detailed view of how you involve spending decisions and taxing decisions and how they become, they may equate to each other, and you need to be careful as to making those relationships explicit. In other words, if I've got a tax expenditure, make that explicit and be transparent about it. And they also make a statement about earmarking taxes. It should be examined carefully. I think they were taking a very cautious and conservative stance about earmarking taxes. At the top of page eight, what we sent out was an article called Characteristics of a Balanced and Moderate State and Local Tax System. If you have a chance to read it, it's I think it's a plain language article in terms of articles that I read on public finance. There are some terms in there that take a little bit of wrestling with, especially when you get into this inquiry, but it's a fairly well-written article, and it gives a point of view, and they emphasize three values, balance or revenue diversification in a state and local system. tax fairness, shielding low-income households from the tax collector's reach, and moderation in use of taxes. They established this as a guideline or a position on the structure of the tax system because they believe that each tax that we use has strengths and weaknesses. Some taxes grow faster than others but are more volatile. And in discussing this issue, and Tom and I have been discussing this, and I've seen it written in the public finance literature, this view of your tax system might be described as a portfolio approach. In the same way that you might approach a portfolio of investments, you would have some investments that would be high risk and faster growth, you would have some that would be more stable in yield and more reliable. In a sense, they're talking about a tax system that has those strengths and weaknesses recognized and balances those out against each other as you think about how you structure your tax system. I made some statements in there about their view of each tax and its strengths and weaknesses. I won't read this whole thing to you. But I think that as you read the article and think about it, one of the points that they want to make, one, they stress the system, think of it as a combined system, and two, they stress what I call a portfolio approach, but a balanced and moderate approach. In other words, mix your taxes because each one may have its own strength or its own weakness. The top of page 9 is a chart that I want you to look at. It's pretty simple. It's called revenue diversification. This is a picture of what your state and local finance system would look like to people in other states who were using the census of governments, census of state and local finance for 2010. And what I've done here is presented in tax type and percentages, and then thrown a figure on here that's a dollar change. What you'll see is that it starts, the U.S. tax average percent used for property tax for all state and local taxes in the United States is shown as 34.8. The Nebraska percentage used is shown as 36.8. What I did was I took the numbers that were in the report and I said, okay, if I adjust the Nebraska percentage to the national percentage, which direction does that go? In the case of property taxes, it would be a $145 million reduction downward because we are a higher percentage user of the property tax. I did that same thing for income. I'll just walk through the percentages. We do use slightly more individual income tax as a part of the mix than the average U.S. state. Slightly less corporate, slightly less general sales tax, slightly less selective sales tax, and by the way, selective sales tax is excise taxes, it's a term we use. That would be things like alcohol, motor fuel, cigarettes, anything that's a structured tax that is structured in price per unit. And so it's not the same as a general sales tax, which is a percentage of purchase price. So they divide it into two different categories. Motor vehicle license tax, they've itemized that for years. It's a fairly small percentage of the mix. And finally, they put a remainder into categories of other taxes, which if you study closely, includes some things like insurance premium tax, which we use, but a variety of other taxes. In our case, they appear to be putting our motor vehicle tax, which is not part of our property tax ad valorem system anymore. They appear to be putting it in that category. When I say it's not part of the ad valorem system, I guess I'm using another tax term. I want to make sure you understand what I mean. We tax your house value on value times a rate. With motor vehicles, in 1997, we switched the way we taxed cars. We used to tax them on value and rate basis. What we did is we went to a statutory schedule that says if the car's initial selling price, manufacturer's suggested retail price is this dollar amount, this is the amount of tax that you owe. Then that becomes a declining basis tax so that over time it actually decreases as in at a dollar amount. And at the 14th year of ownership of your car, if yours lasts that long, it drops to 0 points. So we instituted a new motor vehicle tax system, which as you go into Tom's presentation, will show up a little bit, as because that was a transition point for us when we switched to that alternate system. At the top of page 10, the article that we handed out, and I guess I should put it in context. The resolution talks about looking at the Syracuse tax study, and we gave you a sort of an outline document, but we'll probably do more on this. In this document, I tried to a certain extent to to integrate what the article and the authors were saying with what we might have seen in the Syracuse tax study, because they were done about the same time. Now, it's a very important time in American tax policy history, I guess. Mid-80s, federal tax reform was going on. Many states are having to react to property tax limitations and property tax revolts. So that you'll find that theme throughout the article, including you'll find references to President Reagan's proposal, which I know dates the article, but it's still an important concept to be thinking about as you think about tax reform and periods of history. And finally, I'm gonna, at this point, there one of the author's principles or topics was revenue stability and moderation. This is a really important topic for your study of your tax structure. Matching up your revenue growth and state economic growth will increase revenue stability, in the opinion of these authors. But the authors also advise creation of state rainy day funds to achieve stability and funding. Nebraska, I may know the fact that we do have a rainy day fund structure. The matchup between revenue growth and spending growth over time is the topic of a presentation on revenue and history of tax structure by Tom Berquist, who's sitting next to me and works in the Legislative Fiscal Office, and has a PowerPoint presentation that we're going to shift to next. Now, has it been handed out, is my question. So Tom's presentation looks like this. Okay, here's our page. Matt? It's going to show up in print form, so you can look at it on your desk. It's going to show up on the screen behind you. Tom will walk you through eloquently and accurately the whole presentation.
Just a quick point again, I want to reemphasize that these types of things will be on the website for everyone in the audience to look at.